It is 8:33 in the morning. The program's up front. My name is Brian Edwards Tekert. Years of slashing spending on the Internal Revenue Service appear to have paid off for tax cheats. According to an investigation that our next guest worked on, the government is leaving roughly $18 billion per year on the table in taxes that would be collected if the agency was operating as it has in previous years. Paul Keel covers business and consumer finance for the nonprofit investigative journalism outfit ProPublica. His latest investigation, co-published with The Atlantic, is entitled How the IRS Was Gutted. He joins us over Skype. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
How did you get started looking into the IRS in the first place?
We just thought it was an important place to look in light of the budget cuts. And we'd heard about the budget cuts, but we hadn't seen any coverage of what that had wrought. And so it was interesting to us also because there's been a lot of focus on other agencies where, like, for instance, the EPA or Department of Interior, where someone came in and just started making major changes. And that's a sort of situation where a problem can get a lot more focus because it's happening suddenly in sort of a splashy way. But arguably the changes to the IRS have been no less, major, but have sort of not had the same amount of attention because they haven't happened quite that way.
You describe a kind of 1-2 punch where the agency is both having downward pressure put in its budget, largely by congressional Republicans, and also being asked to do more because of things like the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, there's big, the ACA, the Obamacare, people don't realize that the IRS was doing like a lot of the back end work of that. And that's actually what one of the things that made the IRS a target for Republicans early on. I'm talking 2011, 2012, when they were doing just about everything they could to attack Obamacare. And then there's other things that changes that I think people, if they knew about, would say that sounds like a good idea. One is this big law that the abbreviation is FATCA. But the basic idea is to have sort of international reporting for bank accounts, and it's to counter people using tax havens like Switzerland or Cyprus or whatever to hide their money. This is to make sure that banks all over the world are reporting to all the other countries, hey, we have bank accounts from your citizens. And that is another thing the IRS is, it's a big to-do, a big task to put together, and they've got no extra money for any of this stuff. So it's another example of something that they're having to do and just... The question the IRS is always, what can we not do in order to do this other thing? So it's always a trade-off with everything they do.
So it is counterintuitive that people tasked with running the government would start to compromise their principal source of funding for doing so. Can you kind of walk us through the chronology? Like, when did slashing funding for the IRS become a political issue?
Right. Well, in our piece, we dated back to the 1990s. I don't think the IRS was ever the most popular thing, but it became really a target, the 1990s sort of Gingrich revolution. A lot of the language was anti-tax. Of course, that goes back in conservative politics even more. But this idea that we can get rid of the IRS, let's have a whole nother way of taxing people. That'll get rid of the IRS. We hate the IRS. And there was this big reform in the past in the late 90s. It actually had a massive effect in terms of the IRS's abilities to do enforcement. And you see like this, when you look at the numbers, it's cratering in the early 2000s. Then over time, it kind of receded as one of the main targets of, conservative ire. And so that by the time that Obama is in office and the Republicans come back in, it's kind of round time for round two. And like I said, Obamacare was a major reason the IRS became a target. And then there's this major scandal in 2013 involving this division of the IRS that's relatively small. That's like, 1 or 2% of the actual budget of the IRS is this division that looks at nonprofits. And of course, we've seen a lot of nonprofits, 501c3, 501c4s that are active in politics, and it's a big sort of pool of dark money to be active in elections. And the IRS is supposed to be keeping tabs on these groups to be making sure that, oftentimes the organization's main purpose is not political, because there's rules on how much political activity these groups can do. But they are completely buried under how many groups they had to look at. So they took some shortcuts in trying to finding groups. And one of the shortcuts was kind of doing keywords of like, let's look for all the groups that have Tea Party in the name. There were conservative groups that were on that kind of list of search terms. There are also lefty groups like Occupy or whatever. That didn't really come out until much later. So there's this huge scandal of, you know, they're targeting conservatives and there are all these hearings and investigations. And it became a major rationale for slashing the budget, which never really made sense as a reaction. Like I said, it's a relatively small part of the IRS, but you know, we're talking like, you know, $400 million cut overnight from their budget. And then the budget was never kind of rescued and brought back up to where it was. So over time, over $2 billion in cuts. But as we point out, the brunt of the cuts went to enforcement and also kind of their IT stuff. And one thing that was not popular was cutting their customer service. People were not having their phone calls answered. The worst point was around 2015 when about two-thirds of calls, people to the IRS, you know, calling the IRS for help, you know, can you help me figure out this tax issue? Two-thirds were not answered, which no one thought was acceptable, you know, right or left. And so after that, you saw a little more support for giving money to the IRS for customer service issues, but that never happened for enforcement. And so that hasn't recovered at all. And so the IRS is still losing people even now.
Well, paint me a picture of the types of enforcement that are being left undone.
Well, the most basic thing is audits, and the IRS conducts audits. When you talk to IRS employees, they talk about fairness. They talk about wanting to make sure that everyone is paying what they owe. And when you look at who tends not to do that, people, the kind of the category of taxpayer that has the highest level of non-compliance or the most cheating, if you want to be blunt about it, are business owners. And there's been research that shows, you know, the rich evade far more taxes because they have the means to, you know, to do all sorts of fancy stuff to get around taxes. The IRS has a lot of computer systems in order to make sure people, you know, are paying. You know, then you have W-2 forms and stuff like that to make sure that people are reporting their income. But when it comes to business owners, there's a lot of tax dodging that goes on. So a lot of the auditing is done to make sure that people, you know, are paying what they should. So audits are down by more than 40%. And then you have collections are going after people who didn't pay what they owed. And that's also fallen off quite a bit. And enforcement staff is down a third. So that's going to have effects. And one thing we focus on in the piece is if you don't file a tax return at all, it's actually kind of hairy for the IRS to find you, to tell you you owe this much tax, to go get you for owing that much tax. That takes time. It takes resources. It takes people to man the phones and people call in, you know, in response to some sort of action by the IRS. So that's something that's fallen off the table almost. It's about 2 million people every year who, you know, if the budget was what it was, you know, 7 years ago, probably would be pursued by the IRS for not filing their taxes. But the IRS just doesn't have the resources and just doing other stuff.
Well, speaking of Paul Keel, he's an investigative reporter with ProPublica, where he covers business and consumer finance. Just published an investigation with The Atlantic entitled How the IRS Was Gutted. And the back of the napkin figure that you come to in the course of your reporting is that the IRS is leaving about $18 billion a year on the table that it would collect if it were operating as it had prior to the most recent round of budget cutting at the agency. How do you arrive at that figure?
Well, we looked at, this is, to be clear, just like it's not doing hundreds of thousands of audits that it would be doing if it had enough people. How much money would it be bringing from those audits? How much money would it be bringing if it went out and actually were contacting people and trying to get them to pay the tax that they owed? This is literally like, how much money is not coming in because of enforcement actions? We can talk a little later about, you know, what the overall effect has been in terms of hit net revenue.
Because the point of enforcement isn't just collection, it's deterrence.
Right. And so if cheating has gone up, that's a whole other ball game in terms of how much it's going to impact revenue. But so we were looking at, you know, how much money the IRS brings in from these enforcement activities reflects two things. It's how much tax is out there for them to get and how many people do they have to go get what people owe. And so, you know, we're looking at numbers, you know, 10 years ago when, you know, there were tens of millions of fewer taxpayers, the economy was smaller, people owed less tax, and yet enforcement revenues were higher back then. So we simply looked at enforcement revenues as a percentage of how much tax was coming in. And, you know, how much is that percentage? Where is that compared to where it was, you know, 10 years ago, the level relative to how much tax is bringing in? I mean, all these numbers are silly big. Like, we're writing the story. Like, at one point I checked, I think we used the word billion, like, you know, 22 times in our story. It's hard to sort of wrap your head around it. I mean, the IRS collected about $3 trillion in taxes last year. So even kind of small blips of the IRS can result in billions of dollars that's lost.
Now, you raised the prospect of the lack of enforcement leading to a lack of deterrence. In other words, like a green light to tax cheats, causing a kind of tax collapse. And the comparison here is to how the Greek government found itself operating during their sovereign debt crisis. Can you kind of walk us through what that would look like?
What it would look like? I mean, well, to give a sense of some of the numbers, so the IRS does study this. They do a study and say, how much are people cheating, basically? How are we doing in terms of getting people to pay what they owe? And I think a really important point to realize here is, like I said, there's only certain types of taxpayers who are really able to cheat on a really big scale. So if you're someone who is an employee, you get wages, you have W-2 reporting, compliance for those sorts of people is 99%, because if you don't pay, if you try to lie about your income, the IRS knows what your income is. They're going to send like a thing out. Their computers are going to set something out and come after you. Like I said, it's business owners and other types of taxpayers who are more able to get away with stuff simply. But when they do these big studies, the last one, they estimated that people had paid only about 82% of the tax that they really owe. And like I said, the IRS collected $3 trillion last year. So that comes out to about $660 billion in cheating, which is a large number. But the point we try to make is this was a study that studied an earlier period when the IRS, you know, was better funded. And everyone at the IRS knows, and there's plenty of academic research to show, that when you pull back on audits and collections, people cheat more, essentially, or they don't pay what they owe. And even if you're talking about, you know, compliance worsening by one percentage point or two percentage point, you very quickly get into the hundreds of billions. And so it's very easy to imagine a scenario where, you know, we just had this massive tax cut that the Republicans got through last year that's going to result in $1.5 trillion of greater, you know, deficit over the next decade. You can easily have an effect like that just by the IRS, you know, disappearing. And it's a scenario that people think is pretty plausible. And so then, you know, what the fear is that you have like a fiscal crisis, essentially, which is like Greek, where your debt is running away. You know, your credit worthiness diminishes. And so then your interest rate goes up. And then, you know, it's the sort of thing that people think is impossible to happen in the United States. But, you know, the IRS has never been in the state that it's been right now.
Yeah. We're speaking to Paul Keel, reporter for ProPublica. His new piece, How the IRS Was Gutted. One of the details that leapt out to me in the piece was that the IRS has not universally retreated on the enforcement front. It's been under considerable pressure to step up enforcement of people who qualify for the Earned Income Tax Credit, which is a tax benefit exclusively for poor people.
Right. So it's something that actually dates back decades and has bipartisan roots because, you know, it's like this noble sort of aid. And it's always was contrasted to welfare in that it is aid to people who are working. And it sort of gives it was called like a work bonus back in the 70s. And so it's a massive program. It's something that Democrats love and actually a lot of Republicans, you know, support. Like Reagan helped to expand it more in the 80s. Like we're talking $70 billion a year that's going out and makes a huge difference in people's lives. It brings about 5 million or so children out of poverty every year, because it's really targeted to people who are working, who have children. And like we said, the median person who gets this credit is earning less than $20,000 a year. But there's been research that shows that people claim it incorrectly. I think there's pretty convincing evidence to show that the estimates are high, but there are, it does happen for sure. And so Republicans have focused on this, I mean, again, going back to the 90s, and put pressure on the IRS to audit people who receive this credit. And so you have the situation where it's long been the case that they're audited, you know, much higher than other like middle income people, and then even kind of, you know, upper income people, like at the, you know, $100,000, $200,000 range. But what happens when you slash the IRS's budget? The IRS is mostly people. So you're losing all the revenue agents and like these, you know, skilled people who it takes to audit business owners and wealthy people. These audits of low income people, the earned income audits, those are largely automated. They're computers spitting out, you know, some computer tags someone. They have risk factors. They think for whatever reason this person is claiming kids that aren't really their kids or don't qualify under the credit. And it spits out this thing that says you're being audited and we think you owe X. And then it's on the response. It's the responsibility of the low income person to raise their hand and say, hey, you know, I actually do qualify for this. And so that's how you end up with a situation where audits of the wealthy collapse far more than audits of lower income people, which are more automated, a little more resistant to the budget cuts. But unfortunately, what that means with all these budget cuts is that when someone does raise their hand, a low income person who got their earned income credit, and say, hey, these are my kids, I did earn that income, here's the documentation for it, it takes forever to get it sorted out because there's nobody on the other end. They're very understaffed in order to even look at the stuff that you send in. So it takes a year now or more to sort out. It's not a good situation.
So in that case, the lack of staffing is hurting poor people on the standing up to enforcement end, but they're getting increased enforcement on the front end.
It's not increased enforcement, just that it's fallen off much less than the audits of wealthy people. The thing is, yeah, things are down across the board. And I mean, the thing that I think doesn't get focused on enough is when the IRS, you know, kind of flags these people and the computer says, you know, we don't think you deserve your refund, they don't get the refund. So, you know, people really depend on this to catch up on rent, to catch up on their car payments and sort of that. So it's really kind of punishment for them just to get, you know, flagged for an audit, and let alone to, you know, not eventually get it or be hit with additional tax, which can happen. So it's a serious situation that hopefully the IRS will look at more. I mean, they have to make the audits they're doing proportional to the resources they have.
Yeah, and that's the nut of it. I mean, again, the bottom line of your story, by your estimate, $18 billion a year the IRS is losing in direct collections from being understaffed, being under-resourced, suffering from years of budget cuts, considerably more, potentially hundreds of billions in lost deterrence, money lost to spreading the impression that the likelihood of being caught if you cheat on your taxes is low, especially if you are a wealthy person or a corporation. The big picture is like this. This is the money that runs the government. This is the money that operates the most powerful, the government of the most powerful country in the world. Does anyone in D.C. care about this?
Well, I mean, Democrats have not supported the cuts. And then, you know, read transcripts for a lot of hearings, watched a lot of hearings where they're raising, you know, this issue. I mean, it's incredibly reckless to do this. It's like the only, well, not the only, but it's one of the only areas of government where you spend money to make more money, right? So there's no real downside except for people don't tend to like the IRS. But so Democrats, you know, during Obama's administration, they did boost funding for the IRS because it was seen as an easy way to get more revenue in order to do other things that they wanted to do with government. And so, you know, part of Obamacare was some stuff to kind of help the IRS, make it easier for the IRS to find people to do audits and that kind of stuff. But that was short term and you know, it's come down with the funding. So I think there is good reason to think that if you had a Democratic administration and a Democratic Congress, that you would see a higher budget for the IRS. The question is when does this become a problem for Republicans? And
my bigger question is, like, who is making this a political issue? Like, is it in the think tank circuit in D.C.? Are there any members of Congress who are standing up and waving their hands and saying this needs to be a litmus test issue when we're in control of the House next year? Is there anybody pressing on this the way people are pressing on impeachment or a Green New Deal or single payer health care or anything else that people are trying to push into the national conversation about policy?
Yeah, I don't hear a whole lot of noise about it. I mean, there are nonprofits who focus on this sort of thing, but I don't know if the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities quite can make the same amount of noise as some other, very persuasive nonprofits. We talked to Republicans on the Hill, staffers, and no one thinks this has been a great idea, but it was like a political winner. It was driven by House Republicans, clearly. But the most that we heard was, okay, so Trump now has his commissioner in the IRS, this guy named Charles Rettig, who was a lawyer who represented, rich people who were getting audited by the IRS. He does understand tax law. But during his confirmation hearings, he did not say, like, we absolutely need more money for the IRS. It was kind of like, well, I'll look at the budget. There's so much we can do with technology, which is sort of a way of saying that we don't necessarily need more people. But what Republicans on the Hill told us was like, well, if he comes to us and says we really want a lot more money, I guess that gives them cover for supporting more money for enforcement. But that doesn't seem like it's going to make the major change that's necessary.
Yeah, that would be a Nixon goes to China moment, but Nixon does not demonstrate any interest in going there.
Right.
All right, Paul Keel, really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Paul Keel covers business and consumer finance for ProPublica. His latest investigation was co-published with The Atlantic. It is called How the IRS Was Gutted. Again, the top lines from that investigation, by their estimate, budget cuts at the IRS, largely imposed by Congress, are leaving about $18 billion in taxes uncollected every year, with an unknown impact on the level of tax deterrence, likely numbering in the hundreds of billions more. Despite the shrinking budget at the IRS, there has been no appreciable shrink in the level of enforcement on people collecting the earned income tax credit. That is typically households earning under $20,000 a year. Poor people benefiting from one of the few federal programs we have to try to help them out.